Welcome to the Bart Winkler Show podcast.
It's the Bart Winkler Show. I am Bart Winkler. Good to be with you here tonight. Carlos Ortiz alongside. We got Pete McCarthy on the updates. And we have Emmanuel Barbari set to join us. WFAN Yankees post-game coverage broadcaster extraordinaire. He will join us in about 15 minutes or so. Consequential night around the playoffs. The Winnipeg Jets are staying alive. 4-0 win against Dallas. Well, that was big. The Capitals, nah, they're done. Carolina beats them 3-1, and that series is over. So where things stand in the NHL as of right now, we know that the Edmonton Oilers are in the Western Conference finals, and they're going to play the winner of the Jets and Stars. Dallas still with a 3-2 lead. The Hurricanes are going to play the winner of the Maple Leafs and Panthers, Florida with a 3-2 lead. So Friday night, we'll see that game six, and then Saturday night, we'll see game six between Dallas and Winnipeg. So that is where we're at on the ice, on the hardwood. Which means I'm talking about the NBA now. Denver beat Oklahoma City 119-107. Wow. Okay. We got a game seven. We're going back to Oklahoma City. And that game will be on Sunday. So the NBA schedule has Boston and New York tomorrow. 8 o'clock Eastern tip in New York. Game six. There will be no NBA game Saturday. Game seven will be in the afternoon between Oklahoma City and Denver on Sunday. And then if there is a game seven between Boston and the Knicks, that will be on Monday night. So that is how that is going to play out. Those are the respective schedules coming up for the NHL and NBA. The NFL schedule has been unveiled, and I made it a point last night to just try to tell anybody who thinks people that get excited about the schedule release are lame, that they're actually lame. What's lame is how we can't just be like, all right, Wednesday, 7 o'clock, here's the schedule. What's lame is the slow drip and the buildup. Just give it to us. But the schedule is important because we do want to know when and where these teams play. I mean, we know when and we know who, but we want to know where, or we know where, you know what I mean. We want to know the dates. And also, a team's path to a Super Bowl can be influenced and dictated and affected by what the schedule is. Consider some of these quirks. The Philadelphia Eagles are looking to repeat as champions. This team does not have a single back-to-back home game scheduled. They start the season at home, they end the season at home, and in the middle, they either are on the road for two games at a time, come home, leave. That's not a very consistent stretch for them. There's going to be a lot of traveling, a lot of back and forth, a lot of sleep here for a week, sleep there for a week. It's just a lot of difference. Philly also kind of has the Chiefs schedule where they play at least one contest on five different days of the week. Sunday, Monday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. Now, there are some teams that have a little more home cooking, or at least consistency on the road, and that would be the Ravens. They have a baseball-type schedule. Well, you know, baseball schedule, three at home, three on the road. Weeks 5 to 8, Baltimore is a stretch of three straight contests at home. Then they play three straight on the road. Then they play three straight at home again. Different quirks. How will that affect? These are real things that affect. First thing they look at is the bye. The bye is important. The bye is mysterious and important. Washington is playing four teams coming off a bye. That's going to affect their schedule. That's going to affect their Super Bowl campaign. Dallas. I think of Mike McCarthy. He famously said, Like, he hates. He wants to play Sunday early game all the time.
We got to get in routine. Got to hate adjusting it. If I play the same time every week, I would sign up for that right away.
Not how it's going to go for Dallas. They have four Thursday games. They open the season against the Eagles. They play on Thanksgiving. They play the following week on Thursday against Detroit. And then Christmas Day is on a Thursday. Four Thursday games. So you'll be able to watch a lot of Dallas Cowboy games. Chiefs are the main draw. Cowboys a big draw. Titans are not. They're not on any primetime games. Neither are the Saints, and neither are the Browns. Browns get a standalone window with an overseas game. But this will be the first time since 2000 the Saints will not be in primetime. The Minnesota Vikings will become the first NFL team to make consecutive international appearances in different countries. They're going to play the Steelers in Ireland and then the Browns in England. Now, travel-wise, that's like an hour flight. They, I think, will be able to do well there. And the Vikings, hey, if you're going to play overseas, that's all right. They're 4-0 in London. And they get out of playing in Pittsburgh where they're 0-3. Panthers fans have a reason to think this could be their year. Well, why would I say that? Well, I'll tell you why. They're playing Jacksonville in week one. The last times they played Jacksonville in week one, 2003, 2015, they went to the Super Bowl both of those years. I mentioned Dallas and their Thursdays. And that's a problem that they're going to have to deal with because of the day of the week. They are becoming, starting in week 12, the first team ever to face four consecutive opponents that won 14-plus games the previous year. Yes, there's another game to the schedule, so maybe this was harder to achieve back then. But starting in week 12, they've got the Eagles, Lions, Vikings, and then the Chiefs. In week 8, assuming Tua is healthy for the Dolphins, assuming Michael Penix is healthy for the Falcons, we could see the first matchup between starting left-handed quarterbacks since 2006. The NFL schedule features five instances in which division rivals face off twice in a three-week span. I don't like when that happens. Giants and Eagles do it. Ravens and Bengals do it. Packers and Bears do it. Buccaneers and Panthers do it. Commanders and Eagles do it. And then there is the travel. The LA Chargers are scheduled to travel 37,000 miles this season. The game in Brazil is added to that. They have six Eastern time zone contests. So if you go back and forth how many time zones they're crossing throughout the season, they will cross 42 time zones. And meanwhile, the team they share a building with, the Rams, are going to cross 44 time zones. 37,000 miles they're traveling. The Bengals are traveling just 8,000 miles. Now, the Chargers are in an interesting spot because they do play week one in Brazil, but they're unable to play week two at SoFi. Mike North, who is involved in becoming the guy who schedules this thing, and you may have seen clips of him on every show besides this one. He was America's most popular man today, doing the same interview 15 different times. But he talked to Rich Eisen on the Infinity Sports Network earlier today. Rich wanted to know what some of the obstacles were, not in terms of teams requesting this or that, but the NFL, you may not even think about it because it's their buildings, right? Most of the time. But they also have to contend with other events, specifically concerts, as North ascribed. He ascribed it. He explained it and described it to Rich Eisen today.
Billy Joel was touring and had a health issue, or he fell and he hurt himself or something. So he had to put his tour on hold. And once he started feeling better, he wanted to restart his tour. Those dates started coming across our desk more like April. Ooh. So some of that was a bit of a late curveball. Paul McCartney's going out, so obviously there's a lot of buildings vying for his services. I think the most interesting one, maybe Chris Brown. Chris Brown has SoFi in L.A. week two. He booked that months ago before we booked the Chargers to go to Brazil. So when the Chargers realized they were going to Brazil in week one, we always try to give everybody at least a home game, if not a bye, coming back from an international trip. There's right. no bye in week two.
Right.
So, hey, Chargers, happy to bring you back to a home game after Brazil like we did last year for the Eagles and the Packers. But your building's blocked. Chris Brown's using it. We'll try to find you somewhere to go week two, but it ain't going to be SoFi. And didn't want to really send them to the Giants or any of their East Coast trips. We were hoping to send them to Vegas. Nice close trip. Mm-hmm. Their building's blocked. They got a boxing match and a UNLV game on Saturday. I called the Raiders and I asked them, hey, not so much for your division rival Chargers, but more for the league. Would you be able to play on Monday that week? And they agreed to move some stuff around. So they're going to host Monday night. So the Chargers do come back from Brazil to a road game. But at least it's to Vegas. And it's on a Monday night. So they do get a little extra rest. Going to be a very busy weekend in Vegas with a fight and a college game and a Chargers-Raiders game on Monday. So appreciate everybody.
Chris Brown, who was also in the news today, probably wants that news item to be pushed up the Google rankings, and not that he was arrested for smashing a tequila bottle over a music producer's head at a nightclub in the United Kingdom. So, this incident actually happened back in 2023, and then he got arrested today? I don't know. But Chris Brown is in the news. I didn't understand. Look, I didn't realize he was still like doing Chris Brown stuff. I thought people kind of moved on from him. No,
not only are they doing Chris Brown stuff, he's actually like breaking up like relationships
with who?
So there is a like Chris Brown like meet and greet VIP thing that he's gone viral for. And, you know, women will, I don't know how much it is. I think it's like anywhere between like $5,000 to $15,000. It's a lot of money. But you go and you'll take a picture with Chris Brown and he hugs you like you're his significant other. I'm talking about really hugging up on you.
Like as a way to break up with someone?
Well, I mean, you know, some guys will like see the photo and be like, what the hell is this? And they're pretty like...
But do they know it's Chris Brown? Is he doing it like he's just some guy? Like this is a Nathan Fielder thing?
No, I mean, I think at this point, I think a lot of people know who Chris Brown is more than people who don't know who Chris Brown is. So, yeah, I mean, it's widely out there. Like, you can search it. Like, he's taking photos with many women. And listen, kudos to you if you're into that kind of experience. You know, you get to meet him. I'm sure, you know, that's cool. My wife is not allowed to go to a Chris Brown concert. And if she does, she's not allowed to go onto that VIP like package. I do not care that that's Chris Brown. That's my wife. So you may call me little for that. No shot. Because for Chris Brown, I will suplex him.
We are, of course, talking about Chris Brown, the former Tennessee Titan and Houston Texan.
Right, not the Bills play-by-play.
Who was drafted.
Although he can't hug my wife the same way either.
Chris Brown, who had 3,000 career rushing yards out of Colorado, drafted in 2003. So the 49ers, you want to talk about schedule quirks? I mentioned the Commanders. They've got four teams coming off a bye, and you don't want that. Because they get an extra week to rest and then prepare for you. The 49ers play no teams coming off a bye. They also have the easiest schedule. And that's something we knew before the schedule came out because you know who the opponents are going to be. The Giants have the toughest, where last year's winning percentage of their opponents was 574. So last year's records for the teams they play this year, they won 57% of their games.
So screwed. They got shafted.
Bears and Lions are at 57, 5-7-1. Eagles, 5-6-1. The teams with the toughest schedules are NFC North and NFC East teams. It's Giants, Bears, Lions, Eagles, Cowboys, Packers, Vikings, and Commanders. The team with the easiest schedule in the league is the San Francisco 49ers.
No, of course. Of course it is.
4-15.
Unbelievable.
The winning percentage from a year ago for the San Francisco 49ers is 4-15. So they play their division. Who's in their division? The Cardinals, Rams, Seahawks. Their non-division home games are against the Falcons and Panthers, Jaguars, Titans, and Bears. So they play their NFC West. They play the NFC South and the AFC South. This is what the NFC North was able to do last year. And that's why those records were so inflated. And then the cross teams that they play are the Buccaneers and the Texans, I believe. So here's the Niners schedule. I'll read it to you as a schedule form, and you can realize how easy it is. At Seattle, at New Orleans, home against Arizona, home against Jacksonville, at Rams, at Buccaneers, home against Atlanta, at Houston, at Giants, home Rams, at Cardinals, home Panthers, at Browns, home Titans, at Colts, Bears, Seattle.
12 wins.
Yeah, and I think, you know, they've lost some pieces, but as long as they are like 4-4, the Carolina, Cleveland, Tennessee, Indianapolis stretch.
That's unbelievable. That's a 4-0 month. That's crazy.
You're going to catapult this team into the playoffs. Now, one of the questions people had was, because Atlanta's on national TV a lot, but one of the games they're on national TV against is the Niners on October 19th. They're on Sunday Night Football. The reason they do that is whoever has the Super Bowl, NBC this year, they try to make sure they have a game in that stadium that they can broadcast as a Super Bowl test run. So for whatever reason, they pick the Niners and the Atlanta Falcons. There's going to be a Sunday night where you're watching Atlanta and San Francisco and you're being like, what is this? But yeah, they've got the easiest schedule, and that probably sucks. Although, the past three teams that entered the season with the easiest schedule did all finish with losing records. So we shall see. 888-710-4ISN, 888-710-4476. Very excited for the NFL now that we know the dates. I may be going to two games. I think I'm coming to New York. Am I coming to New York?
Yeah, stop saying if already.
All right.
We're going to see if we can squeeze something out of management on our next show meeting. But let's make it happen. One way, with or without their blessing. I believe I'm also going to go to two games, by the way, now that we're talking about it.
You're going to Vegas?
Vegas, that's in the works. Got the tickets for that already. If I can't, you know, figure out the travel plans with the boys, you know, I'll just flip those tickets. Mm-hmm. But Denver might also be on the docket as well.
Oh, you too.
Yeah, we haven't done Denver before, and that might actually be a Giants win. So that's why Denver's in the works.
That is October 19th for you.
Yeah, so I'll have to figure that out quickly.
And Vegas is,
that's
a flex
November
game end of the year.
No, I'm sorry. That's in December. That one's in December.
Yeah, that's the week between Christmas and New Year's.
Yeah, I'm not worried about that game. Yeah. That's a 1 o'clock game if I ever saw it.
8887. No, that's going to be a late game.
That'll get flexed.
But it's West Coast. They're going to put that at. That'll be a later game.
They'll flex it.
They're not doing a home Vegas game at 10 a.m. out there.
They'll flex it. It's Vegas. Nothing closes.
Oh, yeah. I'm still right, though. 888-710-4ISN. Hey, I mentioned New York. You know who plays there? The Yankees. You know who covers the team? Emmanuel Barbari. You know who's joining us next? Yeah, he is. He'll join us next as Rivalry Weekend. It's here for the MLB. Emmanuel Barbari joins us next on the Bart Winkler Show.
It's the Bart Winkler Show podcast.
Bart Winkler Show here on the Infinity Sports Network. I am Bart Winkler. Great to be with you throughout the evening tonight. As we've been looking at this week, it's Rivalry Weekend. And it's not just like five or six series, you know, the MLB slaps together. They're all pretty good. Even the San Diego-Seattle one, which is like weird. They've got the Eddie Vedder Cup doing it. So they're doing a lot of good stuff. And of course, the big rivalries that you might think of right away, Cubs, White Sox, Dodgers, Angels, even though they're interleague, they've been rivals now for almost 30 years officially on the field, and Mets, Yankees being a big one. Emmanuel Barbari joining us. You can hear him. Yankees coverage, WFAN in New York. Emmanuel, thank you for your time today. Let me start just because my Milwaukee Brewers, people know that by now, started the season against the Yankees. And it was this torpedo bat craze. They still using those, or what the hell happened to that storyline?
Yeah, they're still using them, actually. It's funny, it faded so quickly because a couple of games after, and I wouldn't expect Brewer fans to know this because you shouldn't be following the Yankees once the series is over. 2 days later, Zach Gallen walked into Yankee Stadium for the Arizona Diamondbacks and struck out like 13 or 14 Yankees. So the story fades when the Yankees stop having historic first innings and hitting home runs all over the place. What's funny, though, is as up and down as the Yankees have been offensively at times, like that Gallen game, the Yankees are off to a historic start offensively. Like, they got 76 home runs through the first 42 games of the season, which is pretty unparalleled. So the torpedo bat story faded the second the Yankees got shut out once or twice, but the Yankees are still playing at a high clip.
Yeah, I mean, Brewers fans knew. They're like, okay, this might not be a thing because our pitching is terrible. And that certainly seemed to be the case. But as you mentioned, you say, oh, you shouldn't worry about the Yankees, you know, once that series is over. I do wish baseball, because I get into this all the time. I don't think it's a regional sport. It is a national pastime. It still is. But if you're a fan of a team, that's a big commitment to watch that team six or seven times a week. With the Yankees, I think that maybe anyone outside of the New York area will see them maybe once a week on national TV if they're on, if they feel like watching. But I think we are missing yet another historic Aaron Judge season. For those that don't watch him six, seven times a week, just how good is he right now? We know he's good. We know he's one of the faces of the league. But even still, it seems like we need to be paying more attention than we are nationally.
Yeah, it's a cliche, but I've run out of words. Like, I actually have with Aaron Judge. It's one of those things where you watch in awe every single day and you don't quite appreciate enough what you're watching, because how could you? You know, time passes by in front of you and you're watching an all-time great player, a guy who we're going to tell children, grandchildren, etc. about, along the likes of, I think, Babe Ruth and some of these all-time greats that have ever played the game. And you can't quite appreciate that as much as you should when you're watching it. He has reached such a level where I think he's playing a different game than everybody else. He goes 2-for-5. And that's like an underwhelming performance. So it'll go 2-for-5 with a double, a single, maybe a walk. And that's an underwhelming Judge performance. Now we take it for granted. He goes 4-for-4, 3-for-4 all the time, seemingly. And Judge fell beneath the 400 mark last week. He was hitting 396, and we were all like, how dare he? And yeah, then he went out and had a series in Seattle combined with the last couple of games in Sacramento against the A's where he was hitting near 500. So his batting average is way back up there at 412. He is a runaway favorite. Normally you'd say it's tough to win a Triple Crown. He's going to win the Triple Crown. He could go 0 for his next 50, and he would still be hitting like 335. He's winning the Triple Crown this year, barring injury, which is so casual to say that, but that's the type of greatness we're seeing. You expect it now with Aaron Judge.
Emmanuel Barbari joining us. You hear him post-games, WFAN, Yankees coverage throughout the season, of course, on that show and with the games as well. It has been, you know, an interesting start for them. I think they're carrying along. They're first in the American League East. Judge has been a monster. I want to get into the pitching staff in a moment. Offensively, you touched on that a little bit. There's some injuries right now. How are they doing as a unit compared to maybe expectations coming in at the back end of March here?
I think, way better than expectations, considering a couple of the injuries that you're talking about. The whole season they've been without Giancarlo Stanton, and we saw what a clinic he put on in the playoffs last year and always puts on the big stage. So they're without Stanton the entirety of the season so far. Jazz Chisholm, you may look up, and he's hitting 180 on the year. He's an extremely valuable player. Elite defensive second baseman. The Yankees have him back at a more natural position at second base this year as opposed to third. And he was hitting for power and speed. So, like, he was already at a point where, what did he have, 7 home runs, 6 stolen bases, or 7 stolen bases when he went down with the oblique injury. So those are two major pieces to your offense. Now, the Yankees have been fortunate, and not just fortunate because this is a testament to their player development, where other guys have picked up the mantle, and other guys have played so exceedingly well. Yeah, a couple of guys have struggled, but most of the guys have played so well, you don't think about it. We haven't thought about Stanton all that much this year. We haven't thought about Jazz Chisholm after he went down, even though those guys should factor in a big way down the road. But the youth, you know, Anthony Volpe and Austin Wells are off to really good starts for the most part. Ben Rice is off to a sensational start as the everyday DH in place of Giancarlo Stanton. Jason Dominguez just had a 3-homer game. First 22-year-old ever Yankee history to have a 3-homer, 7-RBI game like that in Sacramento. These are all homegrown players. And Will Warren, Clark Schmidt are homegrown starters. So for as much as we think the big bad Yankees, and sure the Dodgers have taken that mantle a little bit the last few years, the Yankees normally spend to win, or at least there's a lot of spending supplemented by youth. I would say it's overwhelmingly homegrown players this year that have carried the load.
You know, like I said, with the pitching staff, a little different story. They get Max Fried, bring him in. They got Gerrit Cole. So it's like, all right, we got kind of a luxury here. Gerrit Cole unable to pitch. And Fried has really been as good as you could ever imagine. How is that staff? How much are they being carried by him? How much are they going to be looking maybe for upgrades at the deadline, you would expect? Teams like that in that position always do. What's the state of their pitching staff right now with Fried at the top of it?
Yeah, if anything, that was the most turbulent part of this team to start the season, because we talk about Stanton being out, Jazz Chisholm being out on the offensive side of the ball. Gerrit Cole is by far the biggest loss you could have entering the season. You look at Yankee Universe, Yankee Twitter online, the season was over at that point. And, you know, anybody who watches baseball knows that ace pitchers have gotten hurt before and teams can still go out there and win. So the season isn't quite over. But Max Fried has made you forget, if you can forget, to any degree, the loss of Gerrit Cole, because he has been so otherworldly. Like, we knew Max Fried was good when the Yankees got him. We didn't know he was, you know, all time. He's off to an all time start. Yeah. Yankees are 8-1 when he takes the ball. His ERA actually rose. He went 5 innings of 1-run ball the other day, and his ERA rose from 1.05 to 1.11. He's been that good, and it's the craftiness of him. He is a power pitcher, but he has 11 pitches or 11 iterations that he can go to, and he's such a smart pitcher that he's made you forget for the most part about the absence of Gerrit Cole, even though Yankee fans can now dream what could it have been if Gerrit Cole was here. And then you supplement in the rotation. Carlos Rodon had a couple of topsy-turvy outings early in the season where he made that one mistake. Like, he struck out 8, but he allowed a 3-run home run. That was Carlos Rodon last year for a lot of the season and a few starts early this year. Now he's just dialed in and looks like one of the better pitchers in the league. So he's held up his end of the bargain. And then you have Schmidt coming back off that shoulder fatigue, shoulder soreness that cost him some time earlier in the year. He's a really sturdy option middle of the rotation. Will Warren has looked so much better, rookie, back end of the rotation lately. And then they had to DFA Carlos Carrasco, who's eating some innings importantly early in the season, but wasn't really that effective. Now Ryan Yarbrough is like a long reliever swingman type, is filling that spot at the back end and filling it admirably. They're making do is what I would say. Fried has been amazing. Rodon has been amazing of late. Schmidt's trending in the right direction. They're going to have to go and get, I would say, a mid-tier arm at the deadline, like a 3-4 starter who will eat you some innings.
I apologize to listeners. Some of them don't have a problem with it, but some really do. When I ever mention the teams I like, and I already did with you once this segment, but I must again because the Brewers shipped off Devin Williams, who almost single-handedly finally got them to drop the beard policy, but he has been not good. What is the outlook at their back end of the bullpen? Because this is a guy like Williams has been just the sturdiest regular season closer and reliever the last few years. He's been tremendous. In the playoffs, there's been issues. Now it seems like there's just issues all the time with him right now.
Yeah, there have been, to put it mildly. And the last couple of outings have been much better, and he's actually wiggled out of some trouble in big-time situations. So you would have thought Devin Williams gets demoted out of the closer role after a slow start. Yankees just aren't going to use him high leverage. That has not been the case at all. Once they saw him go with a couple of 1-2-3 innings, they're like, okay, you're still Devin Williams. We're going to give you some shots. And lately, he's actually looked pretty good. We'll see how long. There are going to be ups and downs for any reliever, but we'll see how long he can string that together. Now, in a new stage, new uniform, all that comes with it. But if you look, I always say this, it's pretty funny. You look at MLB.com, they do the win-loss and the Pythagorean win-loss, which means what is your run differential say you should be? The Yankees right now should have four more wins than they do because of Devin Williams. And the Pythagorean win-loss normally doesn't match up that way. Like what we see and what it says is normally two different things. No, it lines up exactly. The Yankees should have four more wins as opposed to what they currently have according to the numbers as well. And that's the Devin Williams games right there, where they had a lead, didn't hold the lead, and the Yankees have done a nice job weathering that storm where, you know, Devin Williams, they still expect to have a big role back end of this season, you know, setting up Luke Weaver, who has been phenomenal once again. So Luke Weaver is your guy. He's your closer at this stage. But the Yankees have weathered it. Like, seven of their last nine games following a loss, they've won. And a lot of those have been tough losses, extra innings losses, Devin Williams losses. The Yankees have done a really good job picking themselves back up because Williams has had definitely his fair share of struggles so far.
All right, Yankees have the Mets this weekend. They're hosting. It's the rivalry weekend. It's interleague play for a lot of teams. These are, you know, rivals. It's a Subway Series. Maybe a little different atmosphere coming up on Friday with the Knicks playing, and I think a lot of the fans at least olive branching with each other on that. What are you expecting for the atmosphere this weekend?
Oh, it's going to be incredible. Now, I will caution with that Knicks reference. There was a game, it was actually a game where Devin Williams loaded the bases and Luke Weaver was human for once, and he allowed all the inherited runners to score. This is a game last week where the Knicks ended up winning their game in this, I believe it was still this round against the Celtics. The days are mixing together, but it was this round. The Knicks won the game in Boston, and the ball was dunking into left field. Like, Weaver just allowed a game-defining hit, and Yankee Stadium started cheering. And I had to remind people on postgame, like, the cheers you hear in that highlight of the background, Yankee fans weren't happy that they were losing the game. They ended up winning that game, by the way. It was actually, now I'm remembering it, it was a series finale against the Padres. They ended up winning that game in dramatic fashion. They came back after falling behind. But Yankee fans were cheering because they had the Knicks on their phone. So that could be interesting based on what happens to the Knicks versus what's happening Yankees-Mets. But it's going to be electric. You know, 50,000 people in Yankee Stadium. It's normally, I always say it this way, when it's at Citi Field, it's like a 50-50 split. When it's at Yankee Stadium, it's like a 70-30 Yankee-Met fan split. So it'll be mostly Yankee fans. All the Yankee fans will be booing Juan Soto thunderously in his return to the Bronx. And then Met fans will be having some fun, too. Like, let's say Juan Soto has his moment. You're going to hear those Mets fans at Yankee Stadium. It's always a fun environment. I think it's going to be extra fun this year for the Subway Series.
Should be great. We'll look forward to your coverage as always. Emmanuel Barbari, you can find him on the Yankees post games. Thank you so much, my friend, and we'll talk soon.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Bar. I appreciate it.
Emmanuel Barbari, great stuff from the young man. Yankees and Mets kick off their series Friday night. Again, should be a interesting atmosphere with the majority of the crowd also looking at their phones in a good way to find out what's going on with the Knicks and Celtics. We'll be back, wrap things up right now, an update. Here's Pete McCarthy. It is the Bart Winkler Show. I am Bart Winkler, 888-710-4ISN, 888-710-4476. Carlos Ortiz alongside. A couple of things I want to get into tomorrow. Depending on how the show goes, it may be dominated by Celtics-Knicks. That is going to be a big one. Either the Celtics are going to win and force a game seven, and then you can panic, Knicks fans. Or the Knicks move on to take on the Pacers in the Eastern Conference Finals. Also, there is a story out of Ohio where now the Ohio government is involved, and it's one younger dude that's a assemblyman. I don't know. I'll look it up by tomorrow. But he's proposing or introducing legislation essentially where Ohio State can't play at noon anymore. Everybody's up in arms because Ohio State and Texas, the big first game of the week, of week one in college football, is going to be a noon start, which means those are early on the West Coast, 9 a.m. But that is the bed that college football made for itself. And also, I don't think that it's as bad as people act like it is. So we will have that conversation tomorrow. 888-710 for ISN. Brent is in Myrtle Beach. Hello, Brent.
Hey, Bartimus. I wanted to wish you an early 41st happy birthday. I had my 41st birthday this week, so I was thinking about you.
Oh, look at us Taurus boys.
I know. I normally don't call on the day of the week that your birthday is, so I thought I'd bring it up tonight. We were talking about, like, father-son stuff kind of earlier in the night. I guess I have a different perspective because I'd started coaching before I had kids. And now I look at it differently. I think most of the time when you open your mouth as a parent, you're not going to endear yourself to the coach. I know that's more of like a high school perspective, but also kind of thinking of Shador, I think he easily would have gotten drafted. He wouldn't have fallen like he did if his dad was not as involved in his life and didn't have as much.
There's a lot to that. Cause if someone with his similar talent, and it was, you know, Shador Jones, he would have been drafted higher. He absolutely would have been drafted higher.
And you can also think of it the other way, like, would we know who he was as much if his dad wasn't who his dad was? But I guess just looking at, what's his name, Dylan, the other quarterback that got drafted by the Browns.
Yeah, Dylan Gabriel.
I looked at his scouting report, and it said basically short and not a very strong NFL arm. So that's the person you're getting drafted behind, and I think part of that kind of attributes to Dad. Oh, I did want to ask you before I get off, have you figured out your lawnmower?
Oh, Lawnmowergate. And Jeff, I will come buy you a drink. He had called before the break. No, because there's a button that people have been telling me to press. I can't find that button.
Ah. Well, I have a push mower, and I got frustrated with mine.
Primer.
Like
I can't find the primer. I can't find the P spot on my lawnmower.
Yeah, pretty much.
I got frustrated with mine a year or two ago,
and I read this online, and I thought it was the stupidest thing. But the guy was talking about, if you haven't run your mower in a while, the gas gets stale. So just drain the whole thing and put new gas in it. It might work. And lo and behold, that worked for me.
Where do you go dump gas in this town?
Well, I put it into another container.
Can I just pour it down the sewer?
No, I wouldn't suggest that. I used mine to start the fires, like for my campfires.
I think it's been well established in this show's canon that I'm not a kind of guy making campfires, Brent.
Much disappointment. But, you know, on your 41st birthday, you can change that and love Mother Nature a little bit more.
All right. Brent, thanks for the call. All right.
Have a good night, bud.
You too. I did have, and it might be an older thing, but I did, you know how, like, people get old and they move to Florida or Arizona because they can't handle the winters? So I used to be this kind of guy who loved, and I mean, I still like it, overcast kind of skies, maybe 55 degrees, a little windy, maybe not cold, but comfortable.
Ew.
That's where I lived. That's where I shined. I think a big reason for that was I had a problem growing up, sweating like profusely out of my armpits to the point where I almost injected my armpits with Botox to cover up the pores.
That a thing?
I don't know, would do something like that. But then I just sucked it up. One day, I'm not even kidding. One day, eighth grade orientation, I was wearing a green shirt. And I was sweating from my pit so bad, and I was sweating from my pit, the other pit so bad, that the pit stains ended up meeting in the middle of my chest. Can you even fathom that? The sweat from my right pit met the sweat from my left pit.
That's disgusting.
In the middle of my shirt.
That's like two of your ex-girlfriends like running into each other and you're there.
Yeah. Anyway, I finally like, what is it, vitamin D? I like the sun. It hit me in a way that I was just like, wow, I get why people move when they get older is because you crave that vitamin D. You know? You crave the D.
That's another one.
Well, that you can't use them when I give them to you.
No, the second one, no. But that first one, absolutely.
Yeah, when I just give you the D.
That one could get clipped, but you did that purposely.
All right, I want to thank all of you for being here. I want to thank Emmanuel Barbari joining us to talk Yankees, Jake Brown joining us to talk Mets, Pete McCarthy joining us to talk about all of it, and Carlos Ortiz. Pat Boyle's up next. This is the Bart Winkler Show.
Thank you for listening to the Bart Winkler Show. Listen live Monday through Friday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 Pacific.